Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, John Ensor, addressing what he calls abortion imperialism.
But there's kind of a neo-colonialism or imperialism now by all these globalist organizations that are really going back to Africa, Central America, Asia, and doing everything they can to impose their values on cultures that are predominantly pro-life, pro-marriage, pro-family, and trying to coerce and force and bribe and threaten these countries to legalize abortion.
John Ensor next. John Ensor heads Passion Life, an international ministry which seeks to defend unborn human lives while also proclaiming the gospel. Typically, our concerns on this issue stay focused on the U.S., but John Ensor wants to raise our awareness that it's very real in countries around the world. Please be aware that today's discussion contains some frank discussion of abortion. Here's Spencer Dahlke.
How did you get involved with the pro-life movement?
Yeah, I never planned to be honest with you. I was happy to be a pastor of a mega church in Boston, which means that we had about 75 people on Easter Day, a small church in the inner city. Never really addressed the issue of abortion, but it did finally come up at one point. And lo and behold, I found out through the people standing up and weeping and telling their own stories that probably 30% of the people in my own church had already had firsthand experience with abortion, men and women. Some of them before they became believers, but also some while they were believers and in my church and under my care. And it led to all of us repenting for either shedding innocent blood or doing nothing to stop the shedding of innocent blood. And as a result of that, our church really began to take the lead in starting the first pregnancy help center for the city of Boston in our neighborhood. And that pregnancy help organization developed into 6 ultrasound medical clinics over the following years. And my job just became more and more speaking and helping other pastors and leaders and churches find their footing in terms of creating a proper response to the moral crisis of abortion. And that was over 30 years ago, and we're still going.
And this is Passion Life. Is that the organization your church started?
What we started in Boston was a pregnancy help clinic that multiplied. And then I went to work for a while with Heartbeat International, which is really an organization that helps develop pregnancy centers. But at a certain point, I went off to China and I came back from that in 2010 and realized that while I had been working hard to help Christians in the neediest places develop pregnancy crisis intervention in the United States, the greatest need was actually outside the United States. And so we created Passion Life as a world missions organization. So the best way to explain what we do is if you take people who are passionate about the life issue and take people who are passionate about world missions and evangelization and you marry them, they would give birth to Passion Life. So we go all over the world, but mainly to countries where abortion, infanticide, and gendercide, the targeting of the baby girls, is especially concentrated. And we work with the church in those countries to develop a response to all of these various forms of child killing in China and Vietnam and India and Cuba, in Romania and other places like that.
You've used this term abortion imperialism. Would you care to tell us a little bit about what that means?
Most of us who understand a little bit about American history or world history are familiar with that season when Europe or America had an imperialistic approach to other countries, colonialism, where other countries were basically governed by Western powers. And all of that fell apart over time, but there's kind of a neo-colonialism or imperialism now by all these globalist organizations that are really going back to Africa, Central America, Asia, and doing everything they can to impose their values on cultures that are predominantly pro-life, pro-marriage, pro-family and trying to coerce and force and bribe and threaten these countries to legalize abortion and to promote other values that are contrary to the Bible and very much contrary to the traditional values of those cultures. And so I just call it kind of a neo-colonialism and abortion imperialism. We're going to force you to do what we did in the United States, which is to make abortion legal at any point during pregnancy at taxpayers' expense. That's kind of what we're involved with and what we're fighting against, where we want Americans and others to stop imposing such things into other countries. That's why I call it abortion imperialism, because I'm trying to help them feel the inner tension that they're living at odds with their own ideology, which is it's wrong to impose our values on other societies. Well, the reality is that the left today is doing that. USAID started out as providing food and medicine and water projects and other types of things into needy places in the world. And it very quickly developed into basically a way to promote abortion, contraception, promotion, and so on and so forth. The UNAID does the same thing. UNESCO does the same thing. The UN Population Fund, the World Health Organization, Planned Parenthood International. All of these international globalist organizations are extremists when it comes to abortion, and they're determined to force countries to liberalize their laws when it comes to the sanctity of life and abortion.
Yeah, you talk a lot about forcing these countries to change their laws and kind of accept abortion. What do these organizations do?
Let me give you a couple of examples. So USAID might go to a country like Zambia, for example, or Uganda, and say, listen, we're going to provide you $8 or $15 or $12 billion in foreign aid on condition that you legalize abortion. So they make it conditional. So countries that need that aid are pressured in order to get the money to change their laws. Those are the typical ways. I just read recently that Planned Parenthood's research arm, Guttmacher Institute, there's a huge international population conference in Brisbane, Australia, and they're going to be speaking on global threats to sexual and reproductive health. That's their main topic that they're going to be addressing. In other words, whenever the pro-life community has a victory, they see it as a threat. And their new initiative is to target Africa again, which is not really a new initiative. They've been doing it again. They're organizing ACORCA, which stands for African Coalition for Research and Communication on Abortion. So it's just another big, huge plan to promote abortion where they don't think there's enough abortion. Their mission statement is to promote equitable access to safe abortion. That's what they want to do. And so as the pro-life movement continues to grow here in the United States, after I came back from China back in 2010, I realized that no, we really need to have a global pro-life missions movement, and especially one that's designed to help the international church, which is passionate, strong, willing to suffer. You know, they're courageous people in China, in Vietnam, and other places. They just need to know what God's will is from God's word and help God's people know it. And they will begin to organize their own rescue movement within their own country. And that's what we're trying to do through Passion Life. Yeah, we've seen some pretty good successes in a few places. It's very exciting to see the church stand up around the world and to recognize that the church everywhere needs to hear the call to rescue the innocent. And everywhere they need to do it in a way that also brings good news to the guilty. That's just our mission as Christians today. All over the world, people are surprised, but I really believe this is true. Abortion, Spencer, is the greatest entry point for the gospel in the world today. Let me try to make the case to you. Because most leaders pretty much try to avoid the issue of abortion as off topic. I've always seen it as an entry point, or let me say I discovered it was an entry point going back to my days in Boston. Prior to abortion, A woman or a couple who's in a pregnancy-related crisis is in a crisis of faith. I don't know how I'm going to feed my baby. That's a faith crisis because the Lord is the one who provides. And helping people to trust that God is the provider of our daily bread is an entry point. When people say, I'm so ashamed that I was sexually active outside of marriage and I don't know what to do and now I'm pregnant and I'm ashamed. Shame and embarrassment and sexual sins, those are all biblical ideas that are brought to the cross to experience God's forgiveness. Before abortion, helping people trust that God has a plan for them and their baby is a faith entry point. And for those who have experienced abortion, there is no relief from the anguish and the guilt, the gnawing grief that haunts people, other than the liberating, conscience-cleansing power of the gospel itself that says, I recognize and confess that I have been involved in the shedding of innocent blood. But the cross is also the shedding of innocent blood. And I'm going to claim that that blood can cover up and wash away my guilt. You can't go to a place like Cuba where probably 80% of the population has been involved with abortion now and not lead with the good news that no matter how many and how bad it is in our past, we can confess, we can proclaim, we can trust, we can embrace, and we can experience God's forgiveness and taste and see that it's liberating. And then we're able to start helping our neighbors, both before abortion and after abortion. It provides a global entry point for the gospel.
It seems to me a lot of American Christians at least maybe misunderstand faith as like, well, you know, I kind of believe in God. It's sort of this thing that's opposed to reality and opposed to logic, when really faith is just trust. Most importantly, that God has promised forgiveness for our sins, but also that if he cares for the lilies and the birds, he will take care of you.
And in cultures where we become a little bit more hardened and cynical against Christian faith, which is true in America, certainly true across Europe today, people are not very sensitive to their need for Christ. You know, I'm no bigger sinner than anyone else, so this kind of language. They don't think in ways that our grandparents would have thought. But when you explain abortion to people or show them what abortion is, it pierces the conscience. Let me put it that way. It awakens people to their need for forgiveness. I've seen this all over the world. We'll meet with maybe 75 pastors and other leaders in the church, let's say in China. We talk about four questions. If you can answer four questions, you can lead well on abortion. And one of the questions is, what does the Bible say about human life, including life in the womb? And this is where you get to talk about the value of human life being made in the image of God, and that life, according to the Bible, begins at conception, and so does science. The second question is, what does the Bible say about the shedding of innocent blood? And this is the painful question where you get to really look at, well, is abortion the shedding of innocent blood? It is if it's human. And when we show people pictures of an abortion, then we've seen people drop to their knees weeping. We've seen pastors begin to repent. We've seen men and women both become aware and ask the question, well, can God ever forgive us for doing something so horrible as to take an innocent child and to destroy it? It's really, I think, again, important, even in our culture, to recognize that when you expose certain sins, like abortion, in the context of helping them understand God's forgiveness, you're doing a good thing. You're not doing something mean. You're not doing something harsh. You're not doing it to make people feel bad. You're doing it to help people recognize that, yes, I do need a savior. I do need forgiveness. And look what God has provided. Even this thing that I'm most ashamed of and have never told anybody about, God has already taken care of it through the blood of his own son. And this is where I stumbled into the glory of the pro-life movement at its best, is that in exposing the hard and painful truth of abortion as the shedding of innocent blood, if we do it in a way that allows people to be able to come clean, to experience a cleansed conscience, to have their faith renewed, that the cross of Christ really is the shedding of innocent blood, so that we can be made clean and walk anew with the Lord, then we're turning our adversaries into patriots, you know, or compatriots in the movement. And the gospel goes forward and the babies are saved together. And that's what we're trying to do at Passion Life, is always provide life-saving help, but to do it in a life-changing way. Our motives are always clear to people, that we want to see them find God's provision in their life, including for the baby, for their marriage, and for their life in general through Jesus Christ.
How does abortion look like in these other countries? I know we've talked a little bit about what it looks like in America. What are the social mores there?
Here's the stunning statistic that really moved me from thinking less about the United States and more about the world. Some years ago, I discovered that when you consider abortion as a worldwide event, only 3% of abortion in the world on an annual basis takes place in the United States. Only 3% at most. 97% of the moral crisis of abortion is a world missions challenge. So that's when I began to recognize, okay, I've given 25 years of my life to the United States and helping the church respond to abortion in a life-affirming way. I'm going to give the rest of my years, as long as God gives me, to turning this pregnancy help movement that we developed in the United States into a global missions movement. And I'm going to start in China and Asia, and where abortion is most concentrated, and begin to work with the churches in those countries. If you look at that time, China was living under the one-child policy, forced abortion. You could only have one baby, and that was only if you were married. So there was no single parenting allowed in China when I first went there. That law has changed somewhat, and now China is desperate to have more babies. But after 35 years of forced abortion, the reality is if families could only have one child, they only wanted a boy. So they killed all the baby girls. Ultrasound, which in the United States is used to help people see their baby and bond with that child, is used as a tool to identify the girls in a place like China and target them for abortion. We call it gendercide. So now today, there aren't enough women in China even to solve their fertility crisis. Cuba had even a higher rate of abortion than China did. So in 2018, we started working very deliberately across the island of Cuba. And today, to the glory of God, the Christians in Cuba have started 16 pregnancy help clinics. 16! And these people have nothing. They didn't even have a pen. We had to bring the pens from the United States because they couldn't afford pens. And yet they're finding ways to open these clinics, and they use empty shampoo bottles and they distribute them in stores so that people can drop their few pennies in there. And they use that money to buy pregnancy tests and other things. And they're very, very proud of the progress they're making. And in February of this year, our new data analysis said that Cuba went from number one to number four. So that's an example where abortion was really concentrated and is starting to drop in response to the believers in those countries answering God's call.
You mentioned, like, in the U.S.
It's about 1 million a year right now in the United States. And worldwide abortion data is somewhat controversial, but Planned Parenthood says there's about 72 million abortions every year. I'm not so sure, but even if it was only 50 million, it's still a huge number. And we'd only be 1 million out of the 50. That's why I say we're even less than 3% of worldwide abortion. So our challenge really for the believers here is to recognize that what we've done, especially in developing the pregnancy intervention ministries, the pregnancy help centers, the next challenge for us is to start thinking globally and introduce this model to other parts of the world in the same way that 150 years ago, Christians introduced medical clinics and hospitals all throughout Africa, all throughout India, all throughout China. It was medical missions that became the entry point into those countries, because it not only saved and addressed the human suffering, but it also allowed for people to know what motivated the missionaries and who Christ is and how he makes a difference in their life.
The One Big Beautiful Bill cuts Medicaid spending to healthcare centers that perform abortions, most notably Planned Parenthood. How do you think that's going to affect abortion imperialism?
It certainly will help, because there's a saying down in Colombia. It goes like this. They say, when it starts raining in the United States, prepare for rain. Whatever we do in the United States tends to flow out to other parts of the world. When you start to defund Planned Parenthood, you send a very strong signal to other governments that they are not under the obligation to fund abortion in their countries. They don't want to be at cross purposes with the United States. Again, because we provide a lot of foreign aid and so on and so forth. Close to 70% of most people, no matter what their politics are, agree that we shouldn't have to pay for abortion. If you want one, you pay for it. In one country, Guatemala, I was down there a couple of years ago, and they were, again, under enormous pressure from all these globalist organizations to legalize abortion. Now, so they're one of the few countries in the world where abortion is still illegal, because they said, we love our children and we don't want to kill them. We love children. So the president at that time, Alejandro Giammattei, he actually created a monument that he had dedicated in the capital down there, in which he said, we're going to be the pro-life capital of Latin America. Kind of his way of pushing back against all these globalist organizations saying, not only are we not changing our laws, but we're going to do it proudly. We're going to say, we reject abortion. We reject premarital sex because we believe in waiting till marriage. We believe in traditional marriage. We believe that children are sacred. And we believe that having large families is a beautiful and a wonderful thing. They just kind of boldly went there when all of the liberal culture said that that's anathema. And he just planted the flag of truth in his country. So we want to see more and more of that happen. But that's a good example of both the pressure and the pushback that's going on.
How does the church, especially the American church, move forward from here?
Just to be clear, Planned Parenthood, they have tentacles everywhere. It is like taking 100 different octopuses and turning them into one giant one with lots and lots of tentacles. They've got tentacles into every government source of money. So you cut off one tentacle, you haven't affected any of the others. And that's why we can't become complacent. Now, my world is not particularly in the world of public policy and politics. My world is train up the church to know God's will and to do it with zeal, with compassion, and with the gospel. That's my mission field. But the church has enough people to be focused on all of the areas of the battle, including the public policy area. So we don't want to become complacent. And if you could see Planned Parenthood cut off from Medicaid funding for 1 year, maybe we can go for two, maybe we can go for five, maybe we can go for 10. And if that happens, then that Goliath called Planned Parenthood will begin to teeter and fall. In the meantime, I still think that the number one job of every believer in every church and every pastor is to end abortion in their neighborhood. That's our goal. Find the women in our neighborhood who are in crisis and be their Good Samaritan. Every church needs to have a little Good Samaritan army, or churches working together to start their own pregnancy center, or just be teaching their young people and everybody else pro-life apologetics so they can make the case for life and be confident about it. So there's a lot of things that the church can do, is doing, and must do more, lest we become complacent and we see more of the rights of these innocent little babies swept away in more places in the world.
Thoughts that I haven't asked about that you'd like to close us out with?
Couple things. If you're hearing this discussion and you're intrigued by it, drop by our website, passionlife.org, where you can read a little bit more about the global perspective on the pro-life movement. You know, think outside the border for once. Look up what's going on in Cuba or Colombia or Vietnam or India and take an interest there. If you'd like to learn more about the relationship between defending the innocent and bringing good news to the guilty, this relationship between saving the babies and doing world missions. There's a free download there on our website, and you can read all about it. It's about the moral crisis of abortion and world missions. And it's just a topic that I find that most people have never considered. People who are into world missions have never seen, thought about how abortion is an entry point for world missions. And people who do pro-life work have never thought beyond their own neighborhood or country. So it's bringing these two together. What's the connection between the moral crisis of abortion and advancing the gospel in the world? That's a free download. So I would encourage people to drop by there and take a look.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to our guest, John Enzor of Passion Life. Go to passionlife.org. Thanks for listening, and I hope you can join us again on Monday at the same time for another edition of His People.